It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
News Podcast presents Brett Baer's All-Star Panel.
America's got to be in the lead if you want to deal with these threats. We're going to lead.
The morning is over. The Shiva is done. And if you're a conservative, you should be optimistic.
You know, my main priority right now is making sure that it delivers for the American people.
We have to make our country great again, and I will do that.
I think the president gets criticized by people all the time for the stuff he says, by people who ignore what he does.
Now, Fox's chief political anchor, Brett Baer.
As the seismic decision by the Supreme Court to overturn Roe v. Wade continues to send ripples through the country, politically, demonstrations in major cities for both sides of the argument, the potential effects will be decided during the midterm elections and how states will individually handle the ruling. Plus, another landmark decision on prayer in schools handed down. We're still awaiting the release of major decisions on immigration and EPA regulations before the end of the current term. Meantime, on Capitol Hill, the January 6th committee hearings about the Capitol riot on January 6th continued with a blockbuster witness.
When hearing Rudy's take on January 6th and then Mark's response, that evening was the first moment that I remember feeling scared and nervous for what could happen on January 6th. And I had a deeper concern for what was happening with the planning aspects of it.
For more on this, we bring in our panel, NPR national political correspondent Mara Liasson, Fox News Radio political analyst Josh Krasauer, and Republican strategist, former campaign manager for Senator Scott Brown, Colin Reed. Josh, let me start with you. This January 6th committee, you know, it was not scheduled. It was Cassidy Hutchinson, who was a top aide to Mark Meadows, the White House chief of staff, who had access to a lot of people. And those conversations, apparently she's a really good note taker, under oath testified to some pretty amazing things behind the scenes leading up to January 6th and on that day.
Yeah, she is definitely the most compelling witness that we've seen so far, namely because she was in the room. She was feet away from the president in the Oval Office, and she was with him in the moments before and during the January 6th rally. And boy, did we learn a whole lot about the details of what happened during the rally, and that the president had no qualms with having an armed mob, go forth upon the Capitol. He actually didn't want a magnometer test and the security check for all the folks who were coming in with weapons on that very epic day. And that's a powerful piece of evidence that there was, he knew that this wasn't just organic. This was something that he wanted to kind of foment on January 6th. We also learned that there was this epic confrontation in the presidential car, in the Beast, where he grabbed the clavicle of his Secret Service agent and demanded that they go to the Capitol, that they drive him to the Capitol. And that did not happen. That this was secondhand evidence, is something she heard, but it sounded fairly detailed, fairly compelling, and it showed how determined the president was really to just aggravate the situation, aggravate the mob. On January 6th.
And Mara, and just to circle back to that In the Beast story, she retells it after hearing it in front of Pat Cipollone, the White House counsel, and the actual agent. And so that's her secondhand knowledge of that. But what's compelling, perhaps mostly, is that she had this direct knowledge of conversations. And beforehand, where Mark Meadows says, we could be in for a very, very bad day on January 6th, and that she hears the group's Oath Keepers and Proud Boys mentioned in the days leading up to January 6th in conversations, and is there with the president in the backstage on the Ellipse when he says, I don't effing care about the magnometers magnetometers. They're not here to hurt me. Let them in. I want to fill the area.
Right. Not only let them in, no magnetometers, but that she testified that he was told by the Secret Service that there were weapons in the crowd, that, and the committee even played police tapes where they identified certain people with an AR-15 or with a Glock style pistol.
But were those people arrested? Do we know?
We don't know that. This was extraordinary testimony. And, you know, I mean, this sounds kind of cynical. My first thought was this was a good day for Ron DeSantis. I mean, but it was
from
very
a political point of view. That's right.
Yeah. But, you know, the president was really angry. She had a lot of cinematic detail, throwing his lunch against the wall. And then, of course, the scene you just described in The Beast, where he first tried to grab the steering wheel and then literally assaulted a Secret Service agent and didn't seem to care about the threats to hang Mike Pence. Certainly didn't seem to care, knew, but didn't seem to care that his supporters in the crowd were armed.
Colin, we also always have the caveat about these hearings in particular that they're, you know, all singing from the same sheet of music. It's very choreographed. There is not a minority voice, or there is not another questioner that's pushing from another side. There's not a Congressman Jim Jordan that's cross-examining. But in this case, just that testimony alone is pretty earth-shattering.
I think one of the challenges this committee had from the start, Brett, and it's something that they've, at least to date, managed to avoid, is having this become all about partisan politics, or at least give off the appearance that it's all about partisan politics. And I think one of the reasons this committee has so far been successful is they've managed to keep their members out of the way, including some very partisan folks like Adam Schiff, who is better known for his performance during some of the Russia hearings that cost him a bit of credibility with a lot of folks, and especially with Republicans. And they've just managed to kind of keep let the focus be on the witnesses and their testimony and let it stand. And if you're going to call a surprise hearing at the last minute in the middle of summer and the week before the 4th of July, you better have someone who brought the goods. And so far at this stage, it appears as though she did. And, you know, you've seen this, Brett. You've seen the former president and get crossways with Kevin McCarthy about not having representatives on the committee. And that's a decision they made, and it's one that they're going to have to live with. But the other part, and to bounce off of Mara's point here, you know, there is, I'm beginning to believe, a sense that the Republican Party has so many opportunities in 2022 and 2024, if they can leave the past in the past and move on and turn the page. Some of this stuff that's happening with this committee might be helping them do that. And I know there was a poll in New Hampshire last week that showed Governor DeSantis tied with former President Trump in that first in the nation primary state. So whether that's a byproduct of this committee or time passing or just the absolute disastrous performance of the Biden administration or some combination thereof, we'll find out. But there are opportunities abound for Republicans as long as they can move past and not get stuck in the past.
Yeah. And then we'll see the political fallout and how it does or does not move the needle. I think just listening to every moment of today's testimony, it did seem to be fairly significant in the storytelling of that day and the days leading up to it from a person who was in the room, to your point, Josh. All right, we're going to take a quick pause here. We'll be back after this.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
Hey there, it's me, Kennedy. Make sure to check out my podcast, Kennedy Saves the World. It is 5 days a week, every week. Download and listen at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
All right, let's go to the Supreme Court decision and the impact of Roe v. Wade. We're a few days removed from it. We are in June. We've got a long way to go to November. Josh, does this significance wash out as the battle shifts to the states, or does it become as compelling in some of these independent and purple districts?
Well, Brett, the challenge for pro-choice abortion rights supporters is to keep the conversation going all the way till November. And especially in a political environment where, as Colin was alluding to, the economy, inflation is just such a dominant issue. People are feeling disillusioned just about the economy and the state of their own personal finances. That that is going to be more resonant. The key is that for the Democrats and for pro-choice advocates is to make sure this is a relevant and resonant issue across the political landscape. I've been paying attention to some of the political ads across the country, and you're seeing the abortion issue, abortion rights, Roe v. Wade, come up in bluer states. You're not seeing it yet come up in purple and redder states. And I really think that, you know, you're going to see a few governor's races, especially in the Midwest, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Michigan, those races where you have Republicans who have taken pretty hardline stances on abortion, the state of play legally in those states could change dramatically depending on who gets elected. The decision may benefit Democrats in those individual states. I think broadly speaking, it's just hard to put abortion rights at the top of the agenda for most voters when we're facing so many other challenges as a country.
The other thing, Mar, is that some of these challenges, you know, if a candidate, a Democratic candidate in one of these races, Senate or House, goes down this abortion line, there's not a great questioning about the Democrats' efforts on Capitol Hill, because there were no restrictions really on the bill that they moved forward on abortion, and it's an easy question for a Republican to turn around. Well, do you believe in any restrictions?
Right.
And once you go down that road, it gets pretty sticky for some of these Democrats, especially in moderate places.
Yeah. Look, the overarching battle, political battle on abortion, is who's more extreme, the Democrats or the Republicans. If the party that can be where two-thirds of the American people are, which is abortion should be safe, legal, and rare. In other words, abortion should be legal, but with restrictions. And that is Roe. And whatever party can get there is going to succeed. Now, the Democrats, if they were smart, I think they would just codify Roe. Just codify Roe. Roe is the middle ground. People are happy with it. Even pro-life people are comfortable with it and don't want to.
I know, but that's not what they did, Mara. With the choice to do that, they didn't do that.
Going forward, I think that every Democratic candidate is going to have to answer the question, are you for abortion on demand? In other words, that is how Republicans are going to try to paint Democrats as extreme on this issue. On the other hand, Democrats are going to say, Mr. Republican candidate, are you for any exceptions? Are you for rape, incest, life of the mother exceptions? Do you believe that abortion should be criminalized? What about IUDs? What about in vitro fertilization? I mean, this I think is the big battle, and whoever is seen as more extreme on this issue is going to lose.
Yeah, and what about the abortion pill and how that works with the FDA?
Yes, there are a lot of questions now, but I agree with you. Codifying Roe would have been the sensible middle ground. They didn't do that,
Colin, the other thing is you have some Republican governors from very conservative states like Asa Hutchinson in Arkansas saying that he really wants to relook at exceptions for the threat to the mother, for rape and incest, because some Republicans in some states, knowing that Roe v. Wade was kind of hanging over them, voted for the most aggressive so that they could go to the campaign trail and say they're ultimate pro-life. But in reality, they may be able or wanting to have some negotiation like a lot of European nations do with a certain number of weeks or exceptions.
And Republican candidates and office holders everywhere are going to have to be very careful and be very nimble on questions that come along to them in that form, and be able to show a degree of empathy and sympathy and understand that for the pro-life community, the work is not done. It begins anew now. And one chapter is closed, but there's much more to be done. But, you know, in terms of how the electorate perceives this, first of all, the constitutionality of Roe was not something that was just a Republican versus Democrat thing. Ruth Bader Ginsburg famously questioned whether or not it was decided correctly and suggested she didn't. Senator Joe Biden in 1973, when he got into the Senate, said Roe went too far. So this is not exactly one thing that's limited to one party or another. Certainly, both parties have moved further left and right on it over the years. But the other thing, Brett, is we've known now for 6-7 weeks this is going to happen. It shouldn't have come as a surprise. And I think one thing to watch is how progressives on the Hill react to what the Biden administration is doing in response to it. Already you've seen some folks grumbling that there's not enough. It's okay to be angry and go out there and say you're disappointed, but now what? And it does seem as though they were caught a bit flat-footed. And some of those voices, Elizabeth Warren is out there talking about the Supreme Court has lost all legitimacy. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is suggesting we need to impeach the justices. These loudest and most extreme voices on the left are going to be the ones who are elevated, and they are going to push the direction in a dialogue in a degree that I think a lot of folks are uncomfortable with, and folks on the, in the Democratic Party are going to have to answer for them, just as folks in the Republican Party will have to answer for folks on their side.
Yeah. And Senator Warren has suggested that we should have abortion clinics at national parks on federal land, which was eyebrow raising, I think, in some of the comments in the days after the ruling. Josh, I guess I'll end with this, in that I hear from most moderate Republicans, independents, that they just say after 50 years, why now? And, the conservative justices had their legal arguments. I think that there is a sense that Justice Roberts lost steering that train inside the court.
Yeah, I mean, John Roberts is the ultimate incrementalist. He understands politics, and what may pass muster intellectually, judicially, often isn't the soundest politics. We're throwing it to the states. They're going to have to figure out how they're going to deal with abortion laws in all the various states at a time when our democracy, frankly, is not very healthy, that both parties are pulling to the extremes and aren't looking for compromise or looking for sound solutions to complicated issues. So it's going to be a real mess. I think Republicans, as you note, Brett, are going to deal with more challenges, not just in 2022. I think it's actually going to be a bigger issue in 2024, when abortion will, I imagine, be a major issue on the presidential campaign trail. And that is going to be something that Democrats are going to run on. And they're trying to hope Republicans nominate someone who's more to the right, who's maybe less willing to compromise on these issues related to reproductive rights. So I think it's going to be a bigger national issue in 24.
Let me circle back, Mar, to where we began, which was the January 6th committee. There are reports that Democrats, the DNC and other groups have spent upwards of $40-50 million in some of these races around the country to support the MAGA, the Trump candidate in these primaries.
Ooh, the January 6th, what you wish for, you just might get it.
right, exactly. But they think it'll be easier to run against them. The interesting thing about the January 6th committee is that there's a lot of focus on the January 6th committee, a lot of mentions about it in Democrats and liberal-leaning pundits. But if the January 6th committee is really good at what it does, and today was an example of it with that witness that was really eye-opening and jaw-dropping at some times, the implication is that being good at it will prevent Donald Trump from running, or will somehow change the dynamic and he doesn't run for president or can't because of his poll numbers, which is antithetical to the political situation that Democrats potentially would want to run against a weakened Donald Trump.
That's a really good question. And there has been a lot of progressive pushback saying, look, this committee is all about Liz Cheney's agenda, which is making sure Donald Trump can never run again, because that's her first order of business. She thinks that's the most important thing to preserve democracy in America, whereas they would like the indictment to be much broader of the entire Republican Party. But yes, there's no doubt that there is, it's tough to choose your opponent. And there has been some Democrats who've succeeded at that. Claire McCaskill is one of them, where you get into the other guy's primary and you try to help the most extreme candidate in the hopes that he's the easiest to beat. That's not necessarily true. But there are a lot of people who just think, look, Donald Trump might be the easiest candidate to beat, but that doesn't mean we want to encourage him or do anything that could help him be the nominee. What he did was so grievously harmful to American democracy that it's important to lay out those facts against it. But you raise a really interesting question, because what if Democrats help nominate some of these extreme Republicans and they end up winning the general election?
Yeah. I mean, listen, we watched a campaign where you liked the prisoners who weren't captured in John McCain.
Yeah, yeah.
And we
had
the Billy Bush thing on the bus and he did win.
Yep.
This feels different, but we'll see over time if it is different. Panel, thank you so much. Now for a bit of history. June 28th, 1914, a Bosnian Serb nationalist assassinated Archduke Franz Ferdinand. This would set off a chain of events that led to the eventual outbreak of the First World War by August of that year. 5 years to the day, on June 28, 1919, Germany and the Allied powers signed the Treaty of Versailles, officially marking the end of World War I. That'll do it for this week. You can hear more of this series at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts. Make sure to leave a rating and a review. We want to hear from you. For Mara, Colin, and Josh, I'm Brett Baer. We'll see you next time.
This is Jimmy Failla, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.